Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Technology Leaders.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Atlanta Technology Leaders brought to you by our good friends at Band of Coders. They are the sponsor and underwriter of this show, and without their efforts, this show would not be happening. Stone, how you doing?
I am doing well, and I got to tell you, I got to give a shout out to those guys, because without their efforts, neither would we be as solid as we are now, nor as solid as we're going to be going forward with our web platform and our distribution. Everything about the way they've treated us through our engagement cycle with Band of Coders has just been first cabin. It's a good crew, and I am absolutely delighted to be affiliated with them.
Absolutely.
But that's no different than the folks in this segment. This is going to be a fantastic show. A little bit later in the program, we are going to have with us back in the studio, no stranger to the Business Radio X microphone, the CEO of Lumens, Mike Slauson. But first up on Atlanta Technology Leaders, it is my distinct pleasure to introduce the Chief Sales Officer with iZenda. Please join me in welcoming to the broadcast Mr. Louis Bernstein. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon.
Well, we are delighted to have you. iZenda, I got to find out where that name came from, and tell us a little bit about mission, purpose, what you're out there trying to do for folks.
Yeah, the name, you're going to have to go back a little bit and maybe talk to the CEO. I can never remember that story, but it had to do when everything was I this and I that, and Zen was the tranquility he wanted in the company. But I think when it really came down to it, that was the URL that was available.
Nice.
See, that's usually the case.
We're very practical here at Business Radio X.
Absolutely. Where we started?
Yes, sir.
Absolutely. You know, the company's about 10 years old right now, and it's your typical entrepreneur story. Our founder and CEO, Sanjay Bhatia, had graduated from Tech in Georgia State and an engineer, and went to work for Microsoft for a little while on a project, a data project, and he delivered the project. And they said to him, that looks good, but can you give us a report so we can understand everything? So he said, I don't have one. They said, well, go out and buy one. Well, he looked around. They were all about $100,000, $200,000.
Oh, wow.
And they poo-pooed that. And so he just wrote his own, and they loved it. And so he goes, well, hell, Microsoft likes this. I'm sure there's other people who are going to like this. So Sanjay holed himself up in his apartment for a few years and knocked out iZenda reports and dashboards. And after a few years, entered into the ATDC here in Atlanta, the Technology Development Center, where we incubated and they more refined the product over the next few years until we sold enough of it and became too successful, and they kicked us out. So we've been out of the ATDC now for about 3 years and just doing great. Our mission is we provide reports and dashboards and visualizations, typically mostly for software companies, that embed our product into theirs, kind of a business intelligence method, and make it easy for end users to analyze and look at data.
So can you share a little bit about, like, kind of walk us through what an engagement looks like? What's the pain? Is the pain that they have so much data that the client doesn't know what to do with, or they're not utilizing it properly, and they're like, hey, we better call these iZenda folks, and they'll be able to help us visualize and deal with our data a little more efficiently?
Yeah, for the most part, that's it. The real pain is, and most of our business comes from software publishers at the moment, people who've written a web-based application. We're 100% web-based, and they kind of forgot about doing reporting as part of their application. And they got customers screaming at them saying, hey, we need better reporting. We need ad hoc reporting. Help us. And so they'll come to us and they'll take our product and white label it and embed it into theirs. And it just connects right into the database. And now it looks like they wrote the whole thing and can take credit for it. And their users are real happy. So it's a real nice thing to do that keeps them enables them to grow their business and keeps their
What are some of the things that you're capturing in these reports?
It's a real horizontal play, so it doesn't really matter what's in the database. They could be manufacturers. We have a lot of healthcare providers, financial services company. Our main goal is to query the database, take the data out based on what the user wants to see, and present it in a really nice visual format.
See, I find myself very attracted to the dashboard idea because I'm certainly no techie, but I can understand, like, if I see a semicircle with red and green in it and a needle, going from green to yellow to red. Like in our business, if we were monitoring how much like one of these segments gets shared, you know, from person to person to person, I'd love to be able to go in there and see, you know, like this show compared to the show we did earlier today. And I mean, to me, that would be tremendously valuable.
Is that something you guys do?
Absolutely. And we do it in real time. And you can set alerts. So right. You can have an alert that checks the system every 2 minutes. It says, all right, you've reached over 1 million listeners right now.
Right.
And send out a report to you or make the
gauge. And then when Lee starts talking, the needle goes down. And when I start talking, it goes back up. Yes,
yeah,
it
could
be fun.
Yeah.
So now when you're the sales guy, so how are you going to market?
Well, I'm in charge of the sales team, and we have specialized our team. It's amazing. I mean, we have customers all around the world, and we probably see 1% of them. I mean, everything we do is over the web, GoToMeeting, and we have a large database. We do a lot of advertising, and I've specialized our team into two different branches. One is an outbound telemarketing team, which is there to really cultivate and get leads for our account executives, and then our account executives then take it from there as well as the inbound leads and present and close the business.
So now where do you get that initial database of all possible prospects?
We've been in business 10 years, and it's anybody over that time period that has requested information or filled out one of our registration forms, and it goes right into our database. We use Salesforce.com, and it helps us keep track of everything.
All right, so if I've got this understood correctly, if I already have a piece of software that I have purchased from ABC Company, I don't necessarily come to you to lay this kind of dashboard stuff on top. You've already worked with ABC Company to integrate it, make their product one that I would buy over XYZ Company.
Absolutely. Absolutely correct. But we do have some companies who say, I can't get those guys to put in anything good.
Oh,
I want to do it myself.
So you will do that.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
So now, do you work with existing platforms like you mentioned, Salesforce?
Right. Well, that's just our outbound sales, but our product is really Microsoft-centric. We have a couple of Linux implementations, but for the most part, we work with the Microsoft solution providers and software providers, you know, running SQL Server and Oracle on a Windows Server.
So I'd like to go down memory lane just a little bit, if I could. I want to talk about this incubation period, I think, is the way that you characterized it. In that period, in those years, was the time and energy mostly invested in figuring out what you wanted to do and how you wanted to do it? Or was more of it that was pretty well baked and you were just figuring out how to sell it?
Both. I mean, our CEO had a pretty good vision of where he wants to take the company, and to this day still, and though we've grown much larger. But when I joined the company about 4 years ago, he was kind of doing a little bit of everything. And so after joining, what it allowed him to do was focus more back on enhancing and developing the product out while I could then build the sales team and start selling it. So we kind of have the best of both worlds.
So I'm trying to get a handle on what it must have been like to live in I'm going to call it like the ATDC dormitory.
Yeah.
What was
yeah.
that culture?
It's great.
Like, yeah. Speak to that song.
I mean, I loved it. I'm a tech guy. I mean, I go way back. I've been in technology my whole career. And I love that experience. I was telling your other guests before we came in, I used to wander down the halls and just stick my head in the different offices and see the companies and what they were working on. And, you know, you'd see these guys in front of these huge monitors look like they hadn't slept in about 4 days and wires were coming out of the ceiling. And, you know, I just love that environment where things were happening and being innovated.
Now, so that was a good experience for you guys from an incubation standpoint?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I had a lot of prior business experience, but I think for us to germinate as a company and start our roots and really start to grow is an ideal environment.
Now, can you share a little bit about, with your product, how important is the training aspect, or is it just very intuitive for the customer? Like you mentioned, it's all web-based, so they go online, they can do this all themselves, or they don't have to really interact with you guys, or is there some hand-holding required, or do you prefer to do some hand-holding?
Well, our product goes in as an embedded solution, so we become a part of their application. And the people that we deal with on the software side are software developers, and they're pretty technical. But even so, it's got some unique requirements to it. But typically, if we're on the phone, we do a proof of concept. And by the time they're ready to purchase, we've probably spent a few hours with them, maybe creating some sample reports. So by the time they're ready to roll out to their customers, they pretty much have it understood. Bear in mind, when they embed our product, They white label it. They put their name all over it. It looks like they did the whole thing. So if any of their customers have any questions about a report or whatever, they're going to contact them and not us. So we training is a big part. So we make sure that they're comfortable and they're proficient in the application.
So I want to hear a little bit about your personal backstory. How did you fall into this?
Well, it's a good story. I actually have been a business guy here in Atlanta for about 26 years or so. Back in the 80s, I founded and ran a company called MindIQ. I ran it for 22 years. It was an IT training and consulting company. Developed the first e-learning do-it-yourself system. Made the Inc. 500 in 2002. And then sold off the software business in 2008, took some time off, and Sanjay, our founder, called and said, meet me down here. I've got this great product. We just have to sell it. And he says, you interested in joining? And I had taken some time off. And I said, no, I don't think so. And my wife says, yes.
Time to get out of the house.
So it was her idea.
You're getting a little long in the tooth in the basement. You know, I'd started writing a book and everything. And so went down there, met with Sanjay, and I'm really glad I did because – you know, for me, it's been great. It's kind of like running my own business, but I don't have to worry about the payroll or anything. So it's fun.
Was that a hard transition, though, to go from being the guy that was in charge to now you're, a cog in the machine? I'm sure you have a vital part and you have a say and stuff, but it's a different hat that you're wearing.
Yeah, absolutely. There was actually a little interim stint in between. I was the general manager of a local New Horizons for a while. It is an adjustment. It took me a while to get used to, but I kept saying, look at – you know, if you're going to accept someone else having to sign the check, you got to do what they say. You know, so it's okay. It's turned out just fine.
So any insight you might be able to offer us and our listeners on recruiting, hiring, and training sales people? Because that's always been a real challenge for me personally, yeah. I got to tell you.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, I'm really big on the training part. I wrote a book, How to Be a Professional Salesperson, that you can find out on my website. It's 262 sales training lessons, one for every business day of the year, and we use it at work. We run two training sessions, one at 8:15 in the morning for our outbound sales associates, and then one at noon for everybody. And we'll pick a lesson from the book, or we'll brainstorm a deal, or we'll talk about a new product or whatever. But to me, if you're always thinking about sales from when you walk in the door, you're more well-equipped to deal with the prospects.
Now, is there a common mistake you see time and time again with salespeople?
There's a few. but I would say probably the most prevalent one is they talk too much and they listen too little. They don't ask enough questions. They're too busy and too ready to tell their side of it and try and slam a deal.
So like in their head, they know what they're trying to say. So they're just trying to force it in there, whether it's appropriate or not.
Yeah, I don't know whether or not forcing their approach, but they're just such in a hurry to get their message out without really listening and understanding and asking a lot of questions and really understanding. And particularly in our business, where you have to understand the customer's business to see where you fit and where you might not fit. So it's really important to learn about their business, learn about the person who's buying the product, learn about their customers, how they license the product. There's a myriad of questions that we have built in that I make sure that they ask.
So is there another book in you? Have you got some ideas brewing for another book?
I think I'm tapped out.
Told them everything you know, huh?
That thing's 100,000 words, and it's a pretty big book. When I sold the business, I wrote another e-book called How to Start a Business from Scratch Without Having Any. And so
I like it.
Two of them are down, and I think I'm going to take a break for a while and just concentrate on helping Izenda hit its goals.
So what is next for Izenda, next for you? And what do you need? You need more developers, salespeople?
Yes. We're doing great. And we're taking this momentum. Actually, we're in the middle of a fundraise to really launch the product. And when we bring that in, exponentially. What I've been building out here on the sales side is a methodology and a process. It's a foundation. To the point where, it's all metrics-driven, and it's to the point where I think we just pour gasoline on the fire and watch it grow. On the development side, there's just a lot of things that we want to do with the product that will help us kind of get and grow to the size company we want to be.
It must be a fun place to work because I know everybody in this room can feel the energy and the enthusiasm, the vigor, the vitality that you bring to the work, and I know that has a great deal to do with generating results with and through other people. It must be you must have built a fantastic culture there.
Well, I'm a part of it, and I like being there. It's fun. I enjoy what I do. I just want to keep doing it. I love sales. I think my first sales job was in Skokie, Illinois, at a hot dog stand. I think I was the first guy to say, "You want fries with that?" I'm not kidding. I was 12 years old, and as before the first McDonald's had really come around. So yeah, I like it.
So the role or function, the person that you or the folks on your sales team need to have a meaningful conversation with inside companies, who are those folks to talk about, maybe engaging your services?
Sure. We'll try to start at the top with the CEO or the chief technology officer.
Okay.
Many times the CEO will tell the developer or CTO, says, listen, everyone's screaming about reporting. Go out and find us something. And our first contact will be with a developer, a tech guy, who will come in and start to do the evaluation, which actually is kind of a difficult process in the cycle, which I call the buying cycle, the customer's buying cycle,
right?
Because you have to keep the developer involved, but you also have to bring in the CEO and CTO and the person who's going to write the check to make sure that this is a real deal without alienating the developer. It's a complex sale where we're working both ends against the middle, and it takes a lot of skill and understanding and training to be able to pull that off.
Now, can you train just anybody to do that, or do they have to have a certain background or skill set?
I try to
be honest. That sounds very nuanced. Like, this takes, it's not just somebody like a used car salesman can just pop in here because he sold cars. He can do this, right?
I actually try to hire people with very, very limited sales experience.
Right. So it's easier to start from scratch?
I don't want to, I don't want to have to try to unlearn any bad habits. So, I do like people who are really smart. I love people who are smarter than me, who love technology, and who are outgoing and willing to be coached.
So actively looking for additional salespeople, or just always open to kind of keeping your ear to the ground for good talent in addition to customers?
Absolutely. We're always looking for good salespeople as we go through this expansion. It's going to exponentiate.
Now, is the sales typically one customer at a time, or is there channels that you can attack and get multiples in there, or how does that work?
Well, in any given month, the deals that I'm looking at managing, we probably have about 30 to 35 deals actively engaged at any one month. Mm-hmm. So, divided up with the salespeople, it's a fair amount. And then we have customers who come back and want to take on one of the add-on products or add more processors or more users. Or
so once you've sold one, there's ways to increase the revenue out of that one customer?
Absolutely. You want fries with that?
There you go.
Where can our listeners go to learn more, either about perhaps a career opportunity and or to have a meaningful conversation about this service and product?
Absolutely. You can go to izenda.com, and you can try this off or learn about the company, do whatever you want to. If you want a free copy of the sales course that I wrote, I offer it free online, or you can get it at Amazon, but the one free online is a PDF, and that's at sales-getters.com.
Fantastic. Well, thanks so much for coming down and visiting with us, man.
It's great. Fun.
You going to hang out with us while we visit with our next guest?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
All right. Next up on Atlanta Technology Leaders, we have with us, again, this is not his first rodeo with Business Radio X. We have the Chief Executive Officer with Lumens, Mr. Michael Slauson. Welcome back, man.
Thanks, Stone. Good to be here.
Well, we are delighted to have you. Now, we were talking about ATDC a little while ago. That's still is your dormitory, right?
That is. They haven't run us off yet. They'll probably give us another year or so to continue to grow, and then we'll have to make it on our own. Somehow.
Who knows? You might be in Louis' old office.
It could be. Hopefully, there's some good karma there.
Yeah. Keep the scene.
I
warm.
Bet there is some good karma there.
Remind us again, Lumens mission, purpose. What are you guys
well,
out there
doing? Well, what we do is real-time, continuous chemical and biological sensing. We have a sensor platform that we're developing that is based on a technology that we've licensed out of Georgia Tech and are continuing to develop, and it's a technology that really can get at anything, from a, as I said, from a chemical or biological perspective, any kind of molecule. We just change coatings on a what we call a waveguide, a piece of glass, and we haven't figured out anything yet that we can't get at with that particular system. So what we're trying to do is kind of create a Keurig machine, if you will. You know, people have Keurig machines for coffee and all
sure.
that. And so we have a machine that, you know, you put in a cheap component and it can do something different than it could with another component in it.
So now, who's your typical customer?
Well, we have an investment recently from the Coca-Cola company. And what we are doing for them is we're helping them screen raw materials. So the initial applications are in food and beverage and looking at industrial gases or water as it comes in and trying to figure out, you know, is it free of contaminants? Coca-Cola does, as you might imagine, an extremely good job at quality control, and they have equipment there already. It tends to be very large, very expensive equipment to mm-hmm. do a job that we think we can do much more cost effectively.
So now your product senses a contaminant? Like that's one of the things it can do?
Right.
So then
right.
you can tell in a simple way that, okay, there's something here that shouldn't be here. So what's the next step that it stops doing whatever it was doing?
Well, that's yeah. right. It can not only tell what's there, and it has to be a reasonably constrained environment. We're not replacing sort of a laboratory analyzer like a gas chromatography or mass spectroscopy
right.
equipment, which can tell you everything in the world that's in your sample. But if there are certain things you're looking for, we can tell you not only if they're there, but also in what quantities are there, and then we could raise, you know, alarms or send out signals to the system continuously, you know, in real time, so you can stop a process or alter a process immediately, mm-hmm. as opposed to having to perhaps make a lot of bad product or even, you know, ship a lot of bad product out, that kind of
right,
thing.
Right, so the sooner they get this information,
yes.
the better it is for them.
The better it is. And another example is an early application for us is in the chicken house, of all places. These are large industrial chicken houses, 25,000 to 50,000 chickens in them.
So where there's living chickens.
There's living chickens, and they create, through their waste, they create ammonia, and you need to really regulate that ammonia, or you can have some bad outcomes for the chickens, not only for their own welfare, but for the productivity of the chicken house.
So you got to get rid of the waste.
You've got to get that ammonia ventilated out of that house. Mm-hmm. So what we do is we connect directly to a controller, which turns fans on if the ammonia gets too high and ventilates the house and really, you know, helps the birds gain the weight and helps the birds have to eat less feed as they're gaining that weight, you know, and less bird deaths and less chance.
So what did they do before this?
Well, before the farmer would go out there in the house and maybe try to smell the ammonia level.
Send an intern in there.
Send an intern in there.
If they faint.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Time to put the fan on.
Yeah. Look around for how many dead birds there are in the house. You know, you don't need a canary in that situation, I guess.
Is that true? Like it was that kind of a manual?
Well, it was that kind of thing. You know, there are some single-use devices, color-changing tubes, those kind of things that the mm-hmm. farmer might go out there and pull a tube, it's called, and get a measurement maybe one time a day. But he's not going to go out there in the middle of the night and do that. And
the weather's bad,
and you know, so this gives him a 24/7, 365 sense of
and
what
so
he
it could is. Trigger the fan. It could all happen just automatically.
Automatically,
right?
Yeah, that's right.
So I would think the applications for this are just wide open. Of course, you know, Lee, my mind goes to maybe protecting ports or places of entry for the country against bioterrorism, because my kid just got accepted in the graduate program at George Mason for biodefense.
How did you fit that into this conversation?
I fit it into ever since she got accepted. Well, ever since she applied, I've worked it into every.
You're a proud daddy, I guess.
Is there not some
work?
Application
there
for that?
There are. You know, that's our biggest challenge. Is there are so many applications.
We
have to focus.
Pick figure out where
I mean, when this technology was incubating at Georgia Tech over 20 years or so, there were probably 50 or so different targets that were proven, and they included things like anthrax and ricin and chemical warfare simulants. And
so initially, that's where the mind went to that type of a product or a solution? Like,
yes.
To that
you,
side.
Know,
you didn't think it was going to be chickens and Coca-Cola, right?
Didn't originally. you know, but what we did try to do is we tried to figure out things that we could do and get into revenue mode quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one of the things about the chicken industry is we have fairly short sales cycles there, and it's also a relatively simple design for us. So we could get a product out and up and running.
And there's some nearby that you were able to probably.
Georgia is, I don't know if you know, but Georgia is the leading producer of chickens in the country. Huh. You know, there's something like 20% of the chickens, and these are chickens for meat, broiler chickens, are raised in the state of Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
So now, did you guys just trip over the Jim Jammy chemical coating or whatever that really helped you get this thing off the ground? Or was it more about that, yeah, we've got that, but it's more about how to put it together and commercialize it? Or what's the secret sauce, the thing or the configuration?
Well, it's both. It starts with a device that we build up on a piece of glass, as I said earlier, using semiconductor processes. We create a physical structure called an interferometer. I don't want to get too complicated, but we put different coatings on this interferometer, and the light that travels through this piece of glass that we introduce into the piece of glass is affected as it travels down the length of this piece of glass by the coatings and by the interaction, the unique interactions of the targets that we're trying to look at, and those coatings. So,
that's new technology. Yeah. That's very different than, like you were talking about, the single use where just a piece of cardboard or something.
When I use the Keurig model, I don't mean to imply that it's a one-time use kind of thing. I mean to imply that we have a standard platform that we can put in different pieces of glass for different applications. And then it's useful for long periods of time in that particular application, but the customer doesn't have to be retrained if the customer has another application that uses another piece of glass that solves another problem.
But that's where the name came from, then lumens, right? Is the light aspect of this?
Yeah, the lum comes from light, and the back end is from sense, so we're sensing with light.
Now, you're the CEO, but you didn't found this? Like, you're not the technology person?
I am not the technology person, but I am a co-founder. I was part of the group that incorporated the company. But we pulled three or four folks out of Georgia Tech Research Institute that were the technical founders of the team.
Now, what drew you to it?
What drew me to it was just what I saw was a huge potential for the company. I just saw an ability to go into a lot of different markets and make a big impact and not only have a big economic impact, but also have just a very significant humanitarian impact, potentially. Being able to, go in, we can't do it yet, but we hope to in the future go into developing countries that are struggling with water issues and having to do all kinds of complicated things to figure out if they've got good water and therefore not necessarily doing those things. We could change that whole dynamic, air quality, those types of things. Ultimately, we think we have a device that can be useful in medical applications for very quick diagnosis of, for example, respiratory or blood-based diseases, and you don't have to go off and have labs analyze something for 3 or 4 days before you figure out what the prognosis is, or the diagnosis is, I should say.
I guess it's a great problem to have, but I would think that daily you live with this challenge that you sort of bumped up against earlier of where to focus your efforts, because there's so many different places to apply this, some of which might, make a... make his dashboards come up so that I know, oh, look, the Lumenzi thing came up.
Yeah, I mean, Louis and I were talking earlier about, Lumens getting out in the cloud with data and maybe using Izenda's work to aggregate that and dashboard
this.
That.
I mean, so many places.
There's so many. That is a daily challenge, believe me. And I've got people on my team that are constantly pulling me out to try to go broader. But I've just learned we've got to do some things right before we can really do that.
Right,
we've got to get this platform in place, this Keurig thing in place, and then we can blow up the company and very quickly move into a lot of different applications.
So with that, I don't know. I guess this the sales and marketing kind of question that I often have is sales and marketing may not be all that tough, or is it just as tough? It's different.
I don't ever want to underestimate that challenge. We've got to certainly prove our value proposition in every application we're going after. And we're going after some applications that are vastly different from each other. Selling to the Coca-Cola system is very different
you're in a perpetual learning curve.
Yeah.
Right?
Right. Yeah.
The people have, it's a different conversation.
Exactly.
Right. Exactly. North Avenue going in the tower there than opposed to going to a chicken farm.
Going up to North Georgia and getting your bunny suit on and going out and hiking around a chicken farm. So, it's a very different sale. Luckily, channel relationships will help us in a lot of things. There are good channel partners that can help us with the poultry business. Mm-hmm. There are going to need to be channel partners to help us with the Coca-Cola relationship. But we do need people, on the sales side as we begin to ramp up that type of thing that are nimble and able, have the bandwidth to go across a pretty wide range of of applications.
And right now, are the customer, obviously they're here in Georgia, and are they only America, or is this something that maybe in another country that the need is greater or it's an easier sell?
Well, that's a great question. Certainly Coca-Cola is international, so we'll need to sell to their system internationally. But in terms of even poultry, though, there are geographies where animal welfare considerations are becoming far more prevalent and far more in the forefront than they are here. Mm-hmm. Europe has strict regulations on that and strict, you know, limits as to what the birds can be exposed to. And so our sales could very well be easier in Europe. You know, that said, it is tough for a small young company to move out overseas, and we want to make sure when we do that correctly. So we are really trying to establish ourselves locally
here first, and then grow out from there.
Right.
Now, would this have helped, like in the Japan radiation nuclear situation that they had there?
Well, in terms of radiation detection, you know, I think there are some fairly good tools for that area, and you know, we're more on the chemical side and the biological side. And we would come into play perhaps more in, you know, like the West Virginia situation that happened recently, mm-hmm. where you had a chemical leak of some sort, and then up in North Carolina on the Dan River, they had a
just
coal ash.
That
leak.
Was just in the news,
yeah,
like the last couple
stuff
of days,
within
right?
the last, you know. You know, this is current event stuff.
Right.
And, you know, when we get our water quality monitoring product, you know, up and running, municipalities and maybe even residences could have sensors in there that would tell them you've got some bad stuff in your water. It may not necessarily tell them what it is, but it may tell them this
enough
is not.
To don't drink it.
Yeah, this is
that's
not.
That's all they need to know. They don't have to know what it is.
Right. This is not H2O or something. Wow. Yeah. This is something other than H2O.
So you know? You've been at this leadership thing for quite some time with a couple of different organizations. Anything surprised you this time around? Did you find yourself faced with new leadership challenges? You're like, wow, I never saw that one coming? Or was it pretty much, you know, no, if I just stick to my core leadership disciplines, it'll produce consistent results?
Well, that's a great question. I thought it was a great.
I stayed up last night and studied, and I devised that question.
Yeah, I know. I should assume every question you ask is great. I don't know why I'm even saying that.
You seem a little surprised. Like,
that's your surprise. Like, don't ask the great question.
You know, like people would say the word "frankly" or something all the time. You know, like, why am I even saying that? But you know, back to the point of just so many applications, and I've never in any situation been faced with the challenge of focus so much as we have here.
Yeah.
And so that's been certainly one of them. You know, a lot of the other challenges are similar. You know, a team, putting a team together and having a core team and then mixing that core team with new talent in the right way. You know, some of the core teams, as you might imagine, when you got some deep technology like this, come out of research institutes and merging people that have a research type of focus with people that you want to have with a product development kind of focus. You know, that's a different ball game, and melding those teams together is always a challenge, and certainly has been a challenge here.
Well, I can tell you, I can envision myself in this environment with zero technology knowledge, but I can see myself, I don't know, getting in the wastewater management arena, building some great relationships, and outpacing the product. Like, it's not quite ready, and making promises that maybe we're not quite ready to make yet. And then I can see myself coming to your office and referring to the guys in the lab as the sales prevention department. And I can just see trying to manage all these different, like, you want a guy like me maybe that's out there charging, but you... I can just see it could be a real challenge.
Oh, yeah. We, you know, I've learned this in the past at previous enterprises. You know, getting to customers too early is, you know, and many times more dangerous than getting to them too late.
Right.
You know, we're not sitting out there, fortunately, with a lot of competition. Certainly there's competition, most of it indirect competition. But being too early and over-committing, over-promising, and losing credibility is always a challenge, and more so here, perhaps.
And you mentioned focus, but it's also prioritizing. I mean, you're constantly prioritizing which is that low-hanging fruit,
right.
which today this seems to be it, but tomorrow might be something right. else.
You know, and while we're building these units for these particular applications, we're also very much trying to keep in mind this common platform.
Right.
So that, you know, that's really our main priority is to build a platform that we can then scale really quickly into a lot of other things. Mm-hmm. So.
But it's exciting times, huh?
It is very exciting. It's, you know, you saw the Nest acquisition by Google, and yeah. that's based on, you know, the data that's coming out of thermostats and fire alarms and that kind of thing, and understanding people's behavior from that, and, you know, that whole Internet of Things and
this plays predicting right
that.
Into
this
it.
This plays right into that, you know, perhaps with a lot more horsepower on water and air quality issues and
right.
and all that, and in industrial applications as well as just residential types of applications. So we're thrilled to see that kind of thing. We're thrilled with all the excitement around the whole Internet of Things coming together.
And that check they wrote the Nest people.
That check, you know, $3.2 billion will pay a lot of bills.
That wasn't too shabby,
you know?
For a thermostat, right?
That was not too shabby. You know, a $250 thermostat right. on top of it, you know.
Who knew that you needed to adjust your thermostat from your phone? You didn't know right. that need right. was out there.
But now it's there, man. Now you got it. You got to be able to do that. Remember, we had somebody in the studio the other day doing that, and I felt so jealous. They were right. doing it from their phone. Their alarm right. went off or something. Mm-hmm. So what do you feel like you need and want most right now, and what can we do to help? Is it getting the word out about, again, kind of like Louis's situation, keeping your eyes and ears open for good talent in any of those areas, or is it developing new customers or what?
Well, you know, at this point, it's doing the things we need to do to get this common platform built out, and that includes – you know, a lot of things related to the cloud and mobile apps, and so we are definitely looking for, you know, software.
Oh, so you need developer talent?
A couple of software folks, perhaps, mm-hmm. on that part of the game. We've got the kind of the box software piece, you know, nailed down, but the rest of it, you know, how to integrate this into a cloud platform is part of what we're looking for. We're also just, you know, generally looking for, you know, good chemists, particularly ones that have background with sensors, you know, that type of thing. So
are you finding that Georgia's a good area to find these chemists, or are you having to bring them in from elsewhere?
Georgia's been great. We've been able to source most of our talent from Georgia Tech.
Wow.
And we're getting great help, obviously, from Koch folks right here in town, and we're getting great help from, we're working closely with the University of Georgia. So in terms of the location for this company, there's nobody that can ever tell me that this company shouldn't be built in Atlanta. You know, previous companies I've been involved with, well, you got to move it to Silicon Valley,
right.
you got to move it to Boston, blah, blah, blah.
Right, because you have some experience elsewhere, not in Georgia, right? You did some time in Chicago.
I did two long winters, two long springs in Chicago.
It was 2 years?
Yeah, it was. I was at a great venture fund up there called Arch Venture Partners, and they're specialized in spinning out university-based technology and federal uh-huh. labs-based technology. So that was great. Great background for
right.
some of this.
That you're doing today.
Right, right. So, you know, in terms of licensing technology and early stage company formation and all that, that was great training ground. I was also here with a venture capital fund, an early stage venture capital fund, after I left Chicago and came to Atlanta mm-hmm. Before I got the entrepreneurial bug and did a couple startups. This is my second one now. So,
if people want to learn more, the website for Lumens?
The website is lumens.com, LUMENSE.com.
All right. So, well, thank you so much for being part of the show.
My pleasure,
today.
Lee. Thank you for having me. Thanks, Stone. Enjoyed
yes,
it.
Yes, sir.
All right. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Technology Leaders. And again, special thanks to Band of Coders who made this show possible.
Atlanta Technology Leaders is brought to you by Band of Coders. Band of Coders is a company of talented software developers who energize clients' projects and their development teams.